All right, so welcome everyone to another awesome episode of the Average Ontario Anglers Fishing Podcast. This week is a cool episode because we have an awesome guest. We have Jake Collins, who actually runs the Fish Heads Canada website. He sells all kinds of awesome steelhead stuff. And I thought because trout season opener is coming up really soon, it's coming up in only a few weeks, I thought we could have a local expert to give us some tips. So how are you doing today, Jake?
Hey, Jesse, thanks for having me here. Yeah, good. This is definitely something that I've known and done for quite some time here. So I'm glad we can hop on this together and chat about this.
Yeah, I'm excited. I've been river fishing my whole life, but Jake's actually an absolute hammer. So I'm looking to learn some tips myself. So if you're someone that does steelhead fish, you could definitely learn from Jake. But if you're someone just getting into the sport, you're going to learn a lot today. So before we get into the main topic, I thought we could just do a quick CanCast recap. Now, you probably noticed by now, Andrew's not with us today. He's actually busy at work, apparently, or maybe, you know, he fell into a ditch. I'm not sure at this point, but we're just going to keep going anyway. But we're going to do a quick CanCast recast. Now, for the last like 2 months, we've been talking about the CanCast fishing show, the biggest fishing show in Canada. We're so excited for it. And as of recording today, that was yesterday, and I'm super tired. Andrew almost lost his voice. We bought tons of stuff. We had a great time. Thought we could just cover very briefly some of the stuff that we found exciting and some of the people that we met. So we got there bright and early, 7 a.m. or 7:30 in the morning. We got in early, happy enough that Kyle gave us some vendor passes so we could sneak in and see some of the setup, which was awesome. So what we did actually was we got in there, we talked to a lot of the guys and girls that were setting up, but then we actually had the fun opportunity to go out into the line and hand out some free gifts to people in line. So we had big buckets full of stuff, full of baits, hats, sunglasses, lanyards, all that kind of stuff. So that was one of my favorite parts. That was actually awesome seeing some people that we knew too. The show was absolutely insane. I don't even want to guess how many people, but there was thousands and thousands of people there, and we met tons of people. So if we did actually see you at the show, it was nice to meet you. And I had a lot of people message me and say, you know what, we were looking for you guys, we couldn't find you. It was a nut house in there. So we got tons of great stuff. We met tons of great people, and it was an absolutely great show. I could go on for hours, but we'll have to do another episode probably next week where Andrew goes in depth on some of the cool baits that he bought as well. So we're going to get back into our main topic. Like we mentioned, Jake is a steelhead hammer. And how long have you been steelhead fishing?
Yeah, I'm going to say it's got to be close to 20 years since I went out. First river fishing experience with my dad. So, and then it's just sort of got exponentially deeper, and I'm down so far deep down this rabbit hole of steelhead fishing now, but I do it like I love it, right? You do it for a reason.
Tell us a little bit about Fish Heads Canada.
So Fish Heads Canada started by Mike Hagen. He's a buddy of mine. He started this back when he was sort of the first to market with an e-com, you know, buy your bait, buy your products online, where that wasn't so much of a thing. It was 2007 he started that. So from there, started as an incredibly small shop. We're still small and niche in the world of steelhead fishing. We definitely don't target to everything like, you know, some of the big guys do. But we like to think we have that advantage in dealing, you know, premium bait, everything you need if you want to go out and learn how to steelhead fish or salmon fish in the creeks and rivers.
Definitely. And I know I've ordered stuff from you. I bought a few rods off of you. I've bought a lot of your row over the years. You carry basically anything that I personally would need or even dream of needing, a lot of nice center pin reels and a whole good selection of rods, anything you need to get out steelhead fishing or even pinning for salmon in the fall, Fish Heads Canada has it. And the shipping is fast. I remember ordering row and I literally had it like 2 days later. It was fast. Maybe that's just because I live close. But
the row is a big thing of who we are. And I think how we're recognized, you know, we carry salmon row, coho row, steelhead, rainbow trout row, speckled trout row. If we can get some brown trout row, that comes in, that goes out quick. And we work with our suppliers to get the row cured to a level that is still, you know, a premium product. So many people want, you know, fresh, 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 and that's impossible to deal as an e-com company or even to even buy it from a bait shop. But we've done this for so long. We've got sort of a recipe down that we work with that has allowed us become who we are in the industry and recognized for the bait that we have, along with everything else you need to go with that to go have a successful day fishing.
We'll talk a little bit more about that row when we get into the baits part of this podcast. So I thought this episode could be about trout opener. Like I mentioned, trout opener, it's very special for a lot of people. When you say like a lot of people, it's that one day when they're looking forward to that all winter long, all into spring. It's that one day. I don't know for you, but I know a lot of guys go out and they'll camp out the night before. It's a big event. It's more social, I find. Like, obviously, there's guys that, you know, they catch a lot of fish too those days, but it's a social event, the trout opener. And it's something that's very important to a lot of people. So my question to you, I have a bunch of these questions kind of about mostly opener and maybe a few weeks after opener, the fishing that we can do. What are some challenges that some anglers are going to have to face when fishing on opener and maybe the next week or two after?
Yeah, so definitely that anticipation of trout openers coming is incredible. You know, most of us wait all year. We get to this point of the year that there's only one first and only fourth Saturday of April. It's circled on the calendar. I'm going fishing. And how exciting and pumped up we get for that. And whether that's to, you know, if that's your one and only day of the year to go fish for steelhead, or whether that's, you know, your chance to get together with a group of fishing guys you don't get to see, you know, maybe once a year or whatever that is. You know, this day's coming up quick, and it's, you know, even after 20 years of doing this, I still, you know, get a little bit giddy for it. But yeah, so, you know, with that, the challenges we see with the, you know, the increased fishing pressure and the amount of people that are fishing now, depends how you look at it, is a good thing and a bad thing. And if you want to take the negative side to that, with that increased number of people, the challenges that come with that are, you know, the increased fishing pressure, the how much more challenging it is to find good fishing spots that aren't already taken by an angler. You know, there's quite a few things, as well as, you know, what externally, what does even the weather look like, and weather patterns and river flows. And if that's now doubled down on the pressure, what does that look like? We could talk about this just only for an hour, but
yeah,
definitely, you know, the amount of anglers that are out there now is a challenge, but there's, you know, that's not, you know, the be all of it. There's workarounds and ways you can go have an incredible day fishing, you know, even with the challenges that we see now in, you know, 2024.
Definitely. So why don't we cover some of those challenges? So if someone's just getting into steelhead fishing, or maybe you've never fished trout opener before, you mentioned pressure, and like, again, we don't want to sound like old men. I'm in my early 30s. I don't know how old Jake is, but he's not that old. But we remember the days that it wasn't that bad. Now, I know some of the older guys will tell you stories of like, oh, I was the only guy in the river and I caught 60 fish an hour. And those days are gone. But even 20 years ago, it wasn't as bad as it is now. Like, there's tons of people that are steelhead fishing now. And it's trout fishing it's enjoyable. It's exciting. The surroundings are amazing. It's no wonder that people want to get into the sport, especially the fact that, generally speaking, you don't need a boat. All you need to do is buy a rod and a reel, maybe a pair of waders, few baits, and you're good. So it's super accessible. It's a great way to fish, but tons of people do it. So if you've never gone to an opener before, you'll see cars lined up down the road at popular spots. You'll go walk along the creek, guy here, guy here, guy here, like five guys here. It's just packed. So if you were dealing with that, if you were getting into steelhead fishing and you didn't know about, you know, like secret spots that some of these guys have, what would you first do? Like, what kind of research would you do to find a place to actually go fishing?
Yeah, that's a good question. And we're all at that point at some point in our journey here. Definitely the resources we have now with, you know, Google Maps, I would definitely suggest starting with, I guess, first thing you have to do is open up your mind to understanding the trout opener now means, that doesn't mean I have to go park in the most popular parking lot to go fish the most popular spot that's, you know, only open on the fourth Saturday in April. What it means is you can go now fish, you know, as long as you're doing it properly within, you know, the definition of the season in your zone. But for most of us here, you know, especially Great Lakes Zone 17, that means you can go fish anywhere within the zone for steelhead. And so I think the biggest thing I would suggest starting with is, you know, forget about what people talk about as the most popular spots to go, and open up your mind to understanding more so the patterns of fish, that every fish you see of steelhead in the river have to get to those popular spots. They likely go past those popular spots to spawn, and then they likely are now dropping back on the second chance to catch them the whole way through the system back to the lake. So as long as you're going somewhere and fishing public land that you're allowed to be at, or you have permission from a private landowner, which you would have to go obtain yourself, which I wouldn't suggest, start with just fishing public water understanding where fish are in river systems and why they're there and the right presentations to be using at the right time. I would strongly suggest following that path, fishing the very, you know, most popular places and going and finding areas where you can do your own thing. And the chances are there's going to be fish there.
I've had some of my best days. I'm not even going to lie. The last few years on opener, oftentimes we won't even fish the normal opener spots. We'll fish downstream and no one's down there. That as soon as it's opener, everyone's like, oh, I can fish up north now. And everyone goes up north. You can go to some of the lower sections of the creeks, which, like you said, the fish are dropping back. There's still going to be fish there. They may not be as concentrated, but there's still a lot of fish there. And you could fish and only bump into one or two guys. So definitely, like you said, learn where these fish are going to be in the river. And you don't have to be fishing the most popular spots, because sometimes you go and on some of the rivers, it's an absolute joke the amount of people you can see fishing in a small area. And some people don't mind that. There's people that don't mind. It's a social thing. They don't mind, you know, fishing shoulder to shoulder. But for me personally, I hate that. I hate fishing with like 50 people in one spot. So I'm the kind of guy I'd rather cover water, go for a walk. Basically, it's more like hiking and possibly fishing some spots that I walk across. I'm going to cover water and just find, you know, a little pocket here, a little pocket there, not focus on these big pools that everyone kind of congregate on. So that'd be my tip too. You kind of got into another challenge you mentioned was like, you know, the water and the weather. Cause like, I know sometimes on opener, it's like, you know, we got flooded out. It, you know, it just poured rain the day before. And there's all kinds of things, like you said, like the weather could be absolute trash that day, or the water could be gin clear and super low. So what kind of research would you kind of do if you're planning to go fishing on opener or that week?
You know, there's so many resources that we can use now, and it's really understanding how they all work together. But by far, the best resource you can go use is the hydrometric data that comes out by the Government of Canada. And you can Google it, and you know, these are referred to as the flows or the charts between anglers. And what that does is it gives you real-time data or very close to real-time data of the water levels in that area. And I'm not sure if Arthur touched on this earlier in his podcast, which you guys did an incredible job on. But when you're following, you know, if you're following these charts, you start to understand, you know, which metrics, what flows and what rates and heights are sort of ideal, what's sort of too high and what's sort of too low. And so that takes a bit of understanding yourself, putting some time in to see, you know, so my suggestion is, if you go check out a river anytime when you're there, when you come home, check the flow and make a note of it. And now you know what that flow looks like and what in real time that looks like at the river. So, you know, I can't just easily give an example of what a number will be for a specific river. That takes, you know, some data on your end to go do some research and find. But having that resource that you might be getting a ton of rain in your own backyard, but where you might want to go fish an hour from now, whether that's, you know, west, east, or north, they might have got a sprinkle, no rain, or even more rain. And so it comes, you know, in handy big time for that, you know, as well as understanding wind and, you know, overcast, sunny, you know, just generally what our weather looks like for the day. All these things together combined, as, you know, again, Arthur said earlier on the previous podcast, all these things together can make an amazing day, or, you know, you might, you know, you maybe should have stayed home, but you need to go out and experience that and know what those days are and what they look like to then learn from that to move forward.
Definitely. Like you said, time on the water is huge, because you're not going to be able to just like, oh, I've never steeled fish before. I'm just literally going to, you know, go down to the creek and know exactly what the flow chart is. Like, you have to literally know. I've gone down to the creek. Like, I've been fishing, you know, the creeks my whole life. And some days, especially when, you know, you're just starting out, you might try to fish days that might be a complete waste of time. Like, it poured rain for 3 days and you go down to the creek. It's 3 feet higher than normal and there's trees flowing down. Like, that's a bad day. So sometimes it's pretty common sense when you can realize these things, but learning the flow charts is huge. And, you know, almost every experienced steelhead guy that I talk to, they always bring that up. So that is something that's very important, because steelhead fishing, it's all about the flow. It's all about the flow, right? And the rain. Getting more into fishing opener, and we're not just talking that specific day, but like at this after opener, the first like week or two, when guys are still targeting steelhead. After that, I find a lot of guys that aren't diehard steelhead guys, they kind of graduate to other fish. They're going to be like, okay, walleye season just opened, and they don't hit the river again after that. I know some hardcore steelhead guys, they're going to still go out, you know, well into May for sure. But if you are fishing this pressured water, we're going to get some tips from Jake about catching pressured fish. Because again, you're fishing opener. These fish are generally, they're hammered. Like they see tons of stuff. They see tons of people. So what are some tips for you if someone was out fishing to help them catch these pressured, finicky fish?
Yeah, so it does get to that point. You know, once you get through the madness of sort of the first morning, where, you know, more than likely the majority of the fish you're seeing have gone through their spawning process, they're now dropping back, they're extremely hungry, and you have this, you know, window of fish that haven't been touched in months that are hungry, and that sort of madness of the opening morning. But as you said, yeah, once we get past that, if you are somebody who wants to go out, you know, just be mindful, first of all, that you're ethically fishing water that's, you know, cool enough still for the fish. I know these fish, some of them get trapped and hang around, you know, they can get trapped and hang around all summer. So, but more so here, just talking sort of like that first week or so, you know, when it's definitely still cold enough out, when you're fishing, if you're stuck fishing pressured fish, you can start with a few tips. And if you're adapting and the fish still aren't going, then it's time to move on and try to find more fish, right? Constant moving, not being, you know, camping with, you've dropped your hip pack, you've dropped your chest pack, whatever it is, your water, and, you know, you're fishing that one hole for hours. You know, my advice is move on, you know, start walking. If you can't, then yeah, you know, or it starts to turn on. But definitely my biggest piece of advice would be is simply downsizing whatever you're presenting. If you're throwing something, they aren't going for it, for what you're presenting, you have a few options. You either change what you're presenting, which would be changing your style from fishing spawn bags or beads or plastics or flies. So you rotate through that, and then you start to downsize your size. And then there's also the color aspect of it. So generally when you're fishing in, you know, in this situation where they're pressured and spooked, generally if a fish is pressured and spooked, it's because they are in a condition that puts them vulnerable, which typically is lower and clearer water, or that they've simply seen so many external variables, which are anglers out there angling, and, you know, they sort of, you know, get weary and get spooked. But you can be in those situations and still catch fish. But it typically means, you know, downsizing your row bag, going to a more natural size presentation, or changing and do something like a smaller fly, smaller stone fly. You know, if you want to get into the world of, you know, dropping right down to a size 18, size 20, size 22 fly. I know they're tiny, but that might be what it takes to get these fish to want to eat.
Yeah, and I like what you said is rotate through the presentations, because most steelheaders, they have all those things. You know, beads are going to be like a main staple for steelhead guys. And everyone generally has row bags, pink worms, you know, all the usual stuff. And you may think, you know, you got a pool with maybe five or six rainbows sitting there. How many row bags have they seen in the last 24 hours or 3 days? You know, possibly say one angler's sitting there for half an hour and drifted in front of the thing 500 times. And then another guy walks up after he leaves, he drifts 500 times a row bag. And the next guy comes up, he drifts a pink worm. They see things constantly. They're not smart fish, but they're not dumb. You know, maybe they got hooked before, and they see that and they're just turned off by it. And it's happened to me several times where you're fishing, you know, row bag, which is a fantastic presentation, and you're just not catching anything. And then you switch to a fly, and then first drift, boom, your bobber flips under. Just that one thing they wanted. They're not interested in the one thing. But then it could be totally opposite an hour later. So you just have to keep switching through it. And like you said, color can make a difference too. These fish, they can be very finicky. They won't hit something if it's literally a different shade of pink. It's so weird. Like, I don't understand how fish see, because I'm not a fish, but whatever they're seeing, they're not liking it. And you switch something really small and then they crush it. So definitely that's a great tip, Jake. Yeah. And the other thing, like you said, is going down in size. I've had days too where I'm drifting an 8mm bead. You drop down to a 6 and you smash fish. But you go up to the 8, you won't catch them. And it, the difference in size of the bead, it's not even that much, but just that little thing makes a huge difference. So those are great tips for sure.
Yeah, I'll just jump in on that and say that one thing that you don't generally see in the space is small row bags. You can tie row bags, you know, the size of a six, you know, think of it as a 6 mil bead, which might only be 2 or 3 little rainbow trout eggs. But, you know, if you got to open up your mind to, if I can present a single 6 millimeter bead and the fish wants to eat that, I'm now presenting something the same size, but now you're miles ahead because you've got the smell of natural fish roe with that as well.
That's a great
tip. Right. So I keep that one tight to the chest sometimes, but you rarely ever see somebody fishing something so small like that. You know, and then, you know, beads, there's now hundreds and thousands of colors where we're not quite that far yet with spawn tying material, but you know, you also don't need all of that, right? You stick to your natural colors, peach, blue, white. Don't sleep on the really small row bag sizes.
I used to tie my own flies. I actually used to fly fish a lot. I used to tie my own flies, and I had a day maybe 2 years ago, and I was fishing one of the creeks out of Lake Ontario, gin clear, maybe a few days after opener. And I found this pocket of fish, and there was literally like 20 of them just randomly behind this little pocket, just sitting there. And I couldn't get them to hit anything. And I pulled out of my bag, I have a little fly box, and I had these like number 16 or 18 prince nymphs that I used to tie, literally smaller than your pinky nail, just tiny little things. And I tied one on, and I was like, you can't even see the thing. It's so small. He cast it out, and I smoked like 3 or 4 of them in half an hour, these fish. They just, that little tiny bait that you basically can't even get your line in when you're tying it on the hook. These fish, they hit it. It's just the tiniest little baits. Don't worry. They're big fish. They like to eat big things, but they also like to eat tiny things. Do you have any theories on why a big rainbow trout will hit a tiny little nymph?
I think they're smart. Like any fish, the older they are, the more things they've seen. They put themselves in the situation to get that big, and that's not just out of pure luck. Like they do get smarter with time, I believe. You know, big things just might look more unnatural to them. I think sometimes they're just not like us. Like if I've just sat down and had like a killer ribeye dinner and somebody puts another ribeye in front of me, you know, maybe I'm not hungry enough to just, you know, it's as simple as that.
Yeah. Just a little snack, something that they haven't seen. Definitely. So I thought we could talk a little bit about stealth and patience, two things that I personally think that every steelhead or trout angler should have. So why don't we talk about stealth? One mistake I see a lot of people steelhead fishing is they have no stealth. They're walking down the creek, clomping down the bank, or they're wading through spots that they shouldn't wade through. I see a lot of people that wade and fish in the creek when they could be standing on the bank. I'm like, why are you in the water? You're scaring the fish. So do you have any tips for being stealthy? And why is that so important? Like, we know steelhead are very finicky and spooky. So why is stealth so important?
Yeah, it's simply if the fish know you're there, you know, they have their, you know, I'm so far from a biologist, but their ability to sense that you're there and there's danger, and then, you know, I'm not going to eat, right? I'm not going to bite down on whatever you're presenting. So, yeah, I think, you know, just like hunting or fishing, especially with steelheading, it is incredibly important. And, you know, things you can do is try to dress sort of as camouflaged as you can with the environment. And, you know, just be cautious and wary of what you're doing with your footwork. If you don't need, I never am in the water unless I have to be. That simply being in the water is going to spook fish versus not. But then you see ducks come flying in. It's like, you know, there's so much natural stuff that happens that, you know, you sort of mimic at the same time. But yeah, I think it's a best practice. The least amount of time you can spend on the water, especially in a spot you're fishing, will help you. And, you know, this is another thing that I learned way back when I started, and I was doing some reading, now everything's online, and this is actually reading a hard copy book, but there's something with the angle of the fish eyes lens that when you see some people make the mistake of crouching down because they think they're making themselves more stealthy, the fish actually pick that up more. The best thing you can almost do is stand tall like a tree versus crouch down. The taller you are, as I remember it at least, less identifiable you are as if you were crouched down. I've never really crouched down, so I can't say that I actually have data to support that, but I don't worry about crouching down to hide myself anyway.
Yeah. So I know a lot of people, they will think that fish cannot see above the water, which is completely false. They can see at certain angles above the water, which is important, like you said. To, I'm not saying you have to dress in full camouflage when you're trout fishing, but you don't want to be one of those guys that's wearing a full, you know, deer hunting jacket down at the creek, a bright orange jacket. I'm not saying you won't catch fish, but your possibility of catching more fish is probably not the best wearing that. A lot of people too, like you said, yeah, they'll wade through and stand in the pool they're fishing. It's like, if you don't have to stand in the water, not only is it not the best for the, you know, ecology of the creek, just, you know, running through the water all the time, but you want to be as stealthy as possible. And in my opinion, that means not being in the water. And also, like you said, if you have to stand so the fish can't see you, don't be waving your arms around or try to be still. Try to be stealthy. You're stocking up on these fish, especially after opener. They're very like gun shy. A lot of stuff has happened to them in the last few weeks and they've seen a lot of anglers. So the more stealthy you can be, the more fish you're going to catch, in my opinion. Because how many times have you walked down the bank and you don't see a fish? You step down hard and all of a sudden you see like two or three fish shoot up the creek that you didn't see. Like they can feel your steps. They can feel it, right?
So they see you before you see them, you know, in, especially in that, you know, lower, clearer water. Absolutely.
They're very aware of their environment. 100%. Most fish are. So what about patience? When it comes to steelhead fishing in general or trout fishing, why is patience really important for an angler to have?
Yeah, patience and persistence, for sure. Those two go together. And I can't tell you how many times over the amount of times I've been fishing, I have, you know, you go, there can't be fish here. I've fished this for an hour and I've thrown different things and nothing's happening. And then all of a sudden your float goes down. It's definitely, you know, they say muskie's a fish of 1,000 casts. Steelhead sometimes are, you know, the fish is hundreds of drifts. So, you know, don't give up. Don't be discouraged. I think I went something like 17 outings on my own after my first trout opener with my dad that I didn't catch a fish. And it takes time. They're hard to learn. But I also say to everybody, enjoy that journey. Because once you do get there and you do learn, you can always continue learning and growing. But that opportunity of your first window of learning, that patience and persistence. And when you get through that and you do catch those fish, that's incredible and invaluable.
And it's so satisfying. I remember that too, because my dad was a trout angler, but he wasn't a steelhead guy. He never actually targeted, like he never float fish. So I kind of taught myself that because that was before like the internet. So then again, we were reading, you know, Ontario Outdoors magazines and Field and Stream and the fishing books. We didn't have like YouTube videos. So I had to figure it out myself. And once eventually, lots of trial and error, lots of patience going out, lots of times getting skunked. I can't tell you how many days I went out and caught absolutely nothing. But once you get that dialed in and you can actually consistently go out and catch fish, it's so satisfying. It's like, it's a lot of hard work, but you can definitely do it. And there's so many resources, like you said, now learning to cast a center pin reel back in the day was a nightmare. Now you can watch 20 videos on how to do it and they're all explained perfectly good. And again, it still takes hard work to do it, but there's so many resources. It's fantastic. I thought we could just go talk a little bit about baits because I want to talk about your row, why it's so special. You yourself, when you're going out steelhead fishing, say you're packing your vest or your sling for trout opener, what are you personally going to bring? And you don't have to tell us any of your secret baits, but what should an angler have just to be prepared for any situation that they could come across?
Yeah, definitely. I think trout opener is the only, and this is wrong, so I probably even shouldn't say it, but I will. It's probably the only time of the year that I sort of throw everything I can into my pack. And you should, I think by best practice, you should always sort of have everything with you. So if something's not working and the next thing's not working, you've got that next option to throw at them that you don't think you would normally use. I definitely will go with, you know, I'll bring, depending on what the conditions show, and this is again, the using your resources of what the flow chart says, what scouting in advance will show me, that will sort of tell me what colors and sizes to bring. But if you're not sure, you know, the full range of beads and, you know, from 6 to 8 to 10 mils in, you know, a variety of colors, you know, start with always having your natural colors, the peaches and the oranges, some brighter colors, and then, you know, some funky colors sometimes. Having a variety of row with you is an incredible opportunity to put yourself above somebody fishing in a pressured area. I will definitely tie up both rainbow trout row and speckled trout row. And what that does is just gives you that option of a different scent if that might be what they're onto that day. And so many times that happens, you've got something that other angles around you don't have, and that's what the fish want. And you can be that person catching the fish. you can never go wrong with having your classic, you know, worms. Some you can go to pick up some real worms. You can even go to, you know, a convenience store and pick up some worms, you know, your plastics, your pinkies, any sort of grub imitations. And I would definitely suggest throwing some flies in. Some natural stuff. Most flies do come natural colors that you see that you want to be using for this. So you want to be replicating stoneflies, caddis, you know, in your olives, browns, blacks, natural colors, and anywhere, you know, between, you know, you can go larger sizes for muddy water and right down to, you know, really small, again, size 18, size 20 caddis things that might be the ticket for, you know, what it's showing for spook fish.
Lots of baits. It may sound, I think with any type of fishing, it may sound kind of intimidating if you're just getting into it. But what happens is you slowly accumulate this stuff. And it's not like you buy a bunch of packs of beads that the next time you go, you're going to have to buy them. Generally, you're not losing a lot of baits, hopefully. And you just sort of accumulate colors. And like you said, like natural, but also have some crazy colors too. Like I've caught fish on the weirdest colors of beads. Like it's just like pink swirl with white. It's like, it looks like nothing in the water, but for some reason the fish wanted that color that day. And like you said, I honestly think flies are one of the most underrated steelhead bait, especially for beginners. Like I know most experienced steelheaders have them and they use them for sure. But I feel like when I worked at the tackle store, when I used to sell stuff, everyone just wanted the same things. It was either beads, pink worms, or Robex. That's it. And I'd be like, oh, why don't you grab some black, like little, you know, jig flies. And they're like, oh, I don't use those. They don't work. I was like, you should try them because they absolutely do work. I don't know what to tell you, but I've got a few of my buddies onto using flies, but they're absolutely fantastic. And sometimes that's all they want, especially in clear water. I find it just such a buggy, natural presentation, right?
There's also the misconception that flies have to be used fly fishing. And that's so far from true. There's no reason you can't tie a fly underneath some shot, underneath a float, and drift it with a center pin reel and have that fly do the exact same thing that you would fly fishing.
Exactly. And I know I'm going to start some wars here, but drifting a fly underneath a center, underneath a bobber, center pin fishing, or bobber, I'm going to get mad, but a float may even be more effective than swinging it on a fly rod. Just saying.
Yeah.
I've done both. I used to be a fly guy. I used to drift like a 10-foot, 6-weight, you know, I used to do all that stuff. I used to indicator nip fish, but I tell you, center pin fishing, in my opinion, can be more effective and less of a nightmare, especially in those bushy creeks where you don't have a lot of space to cast. So again, you're probably realizing as we're talking, we are talking about float fishing. I thought we could just very briefly talk about other techniques. So I kind of wanted to talk to you about adaptability. So float fishing, very popular, and it's popular for a reason. Because it's very effective. The float suspends your bait so that it's not getting snagged on the bottom. You can actually get it right in front of the fish's face as it's drifting down, which is perfect. But there are other ways to catch steelhead in the creeks. And like you said, live bait. You mentioned using worms. I know that's kind of a little trick. A lot of people, they won't even think of using live worms. They'll be like, I use the pink worm, but you can buy a box of those little red wigglers. Those are absolutely dynamite. They're killer sometimes. The fish just absolutely love them. That extra scent. And even the wiggle has to be a huge thing too. Is using live bait something that you regularly do? Or is that more of like a thing you do when it's absolutely like you have to do it because the fish are just super pressured?
I typically don't really ever use live bait just out of how convenient it is with substitutes now, with plastics and beads, that you really don't need to. But I'm going to say that if you do go out and source some real live bait, that your odds of catching fish are probably going to be higher.
I see a lot of people, especially when the water's like, say you have a day and it just pours rain and the water's chocolate milk or very murky. You can do very well, not float fishing, just a regular rod and reel anyone probably owns, a split shot, maybe 12 inches above just a bait holder hook with a dewworm on it. Drift that through a deep hole, guarantee you'll catch a fish. I've caught tons of steelhead over the years doing that, and pick up the odd brown too that's living in that hole anyway. So don't think that you need all this fancy gear to go out and catch a steelhead. You can just go down to a nice hole in the headwaters and drift a dewworm and still catch some fish.
There was a convenience store back right around the corner of where I was at in university, and they sold worms out of pop cans in a vending machine outside the convenience store. You put in your, you know, whatever it was, $2, and out comes this aluminum tin, looks like a pop can, and it's got a little end on it, and it's got, you know, some dirt and worms in it. So it's definitely available that you can go out and get live bait if you're looking for it.
That's hilarious. Man, I need a pop machine full of worms. I remember they used to have, remember Barclays back in the day? They used to have a vending machine that, yeah, you'd put money in and a box of worms would come out. I remember stopping there one time with my dad. Yeah. So definitely worms. It's always an option. Again, like in all types of fishing, I prefer not to use live bait, especially if I'm going to do catch and release, because I want to sound like a weirdo, but like it just seems weird killing something to catch something to throw it back. If I'm going to keep the fish, it's like I'll sacrifice a worm, you know, good karma for me, you know, but I'd rather not use live bait if I don't have to. But hey, if that's what you like doing, do it. Worms are popular for a reason. They sound cliche, but they work. Another thing, I don't know if you do this, but fishing spinners and spoons. Do you ever do that?
It's incredibly effective for sure, especially in water that's large enough that respects that style of fishing. So that's more, you know, your estuaries down by the lake and fishing larger systems of water. You can't just go fish some of these headwater areas with spinners. There's such a small, usually such a small opportunity to do that. But if you're fishing areas that warrant it, then absolutely. I know guys that go out and do that and can be incredibly successful with it.
Yeah, definitely. And if you have a lot of space, some of these headwaters, they're just full of snags anyway. So you hook a fish, you're probably going to lose it if you know, you have a spinner on and it just goes under a log. So some of the wider areas, one thing that me and Andrew love doing is we will go down there, which is like Panther Martins or MEPs, and we'll just cast them, kind of swing them in through a pool. And some of these dropbacks that are just hanging out, they're hungry. They're looking for food. They absolutely smash those things and just scream downstream. It's absolutely fun. But again, like you said, you don't want to be doing that way up in the headwaters because it can be a nightmare, an absolute nightmare. It's good. There's good opportunity to fish the whole length of the creek once opener happens. And there's different techniques you can use. You can float fish. You can fly fish if you want. If you have the room, you can use live bait, which is easy, or you could use, you know, hardware spinner spoons. A lot of guys will use little flatfish too, or the Rebel Cricket Hopper, all those little crankbaits and stuff. Again, there's tons of opportunities. So I thought we could talk a little bit about your row, because this is a product that I personally have been buying for a few years, and I'm not a guy anymore that fishes steelhead hardcore. Back before I was married, I used to get out there, you know, 3-4 days a week when I could. Now for me, I can't have tons of row going at all times. So I need convenience. So tell me a bit about that, the convenience of using your row.
Yeah, sure. So what we do is we offer the service that you can now purchase row directly from us. We carry different species. As I said before, you have some coho salmon, rainbow trout, speckled trout right now. And that allows you to fish with real natural fish row, not an imitation. And you don't have to kill a fish to source that yourself. Now, I know you can go and you can, you know, some guys go out and if you're lucky and you find a fish at the right life cycle in their spawn, you can sort of squeeze and source some row like that ethically without killing fish, if that's what you're after. But anyway, what we do is we provide that row for you to go angle with as your presentation. And what we do is we work with sourcing row from different farms all across North America. We've tried, oh my God, we've tried so many different farms and working with recipes and getting ourselves to the point here now where I truly believe we have premium products. I only fish with our row ourselves, myself. And what that does is, again, it allows you to pick that from us. We ship it direct to you from frozen, cured, ready to go, but cured just enough that you're not sort of getting these fake bouncy balls that if you over cure with some of the stuff off the shelf, you can go buy without naming anything. You know, this is tried, tested, and true. And again, offering different species. So you're presenting, you know, different scents. And that, again, as I said earlier, can be the ticket for having an incredibly successful day out on the water. So what we do is that gets shipped to you, vac sealed, frozen, and you now it's yours. Some people add more cure or color or, you know, additives to it. But our goal is to have it to you that you can now tie it up in whatever size you want, whatever color you want. It's now yours to make your bait you're presenting, but to give you that product to do so. So we offer it in 1/3-pound bags, which sort of gets you between 50 and 100 bags of spawn bags that you would tie up yourself, depending on your size. And then we also offer 1-pound bags now, which is new in the last year, because we had people that would then, you know, split it, share it with their fishing buddies, even, you know, save that discount by buying more volume at once and then back sealing it and freezing it themselves for future use. What we sell to you is ready to either tie up right away, or you can throw it right in your freezer and it will keep frozen for, you know, we've had some guides we work with tell us that, you know, 3-4 years later, they've pulled old stuff out of the freezer and it still fishes well for them.
I have stuff in my freezer right now. And the thing that I like about it is I'm not someone that's fishing like hardcore in the spring for steelhead anymore, but I buy the packs. I buy the 1/3 pound packs and I can generally buy 2 of those and I'm good. And I'll just unfreeze the amount. I'll take the amount that I need for that trip. Like maybe I'm going out on the weekend and be like, okay, I need 50 row bags. I'll take out that much. I'll tie them up whatever size I want, which I like because I can customize it. Sometimes, you know, oh, the water's high tomorrow. I'm going to tie them bigger. Water's low. I'm going to tie them smaller. I can customize the way I want. I can use the mesh that I want, color that I want. So basically I'm getting a premium egg product, but everything else I get to do, which I like. I like to customize my stuff. As most anglers that are serious about the sport, they don't like to buy stuff off the shelf that's already done for them. They want to do it exactly. They're meticulous as to what they want. The point I was going to say is like, I like the fact that I can just tie what I want and then the rest of it, I'm going to seal it back up, stick it back in the freezer. And not have to worry about it. I don't have to worry about, oh, I've got eggs from a fish and now I got to go home and cure it. It's all done. It's easy. It's super convenient. And the stuff catches fish. It's all I've been using in the last probably 3 or 4 years, honestly. I haven't kept a fish in years, like a female anyway. So it's great stuff. And like you said, you have tons of different species of eggs too, right? So I hear a lot of guys, they'll have a specific, they're like, oh, you got to have those coho eggs or, you know, the speckle eggs, right? And it just, that different scent, like you said, could make a huge difference.
There's this incredible misconception in the world of spawn and roe that brown trout roe is by far the best roe. You need to go get brown trout roe if you want to have a great day fishing. And I can honestly tell you, I've taken brown trout roe, speckled trout roe, rainbow trout roe, and salmon roe all with me doing field testing, fished in a pool that I knew there were fish in, nothing went on brown trout roe. I throw speckled trout roe in, next drift fish. So, and I'm not saying that's a very small example of one situation. I'm not saying brown trout roe won't go catch you fish. It absolutely will. But don't get caught up. And this goes for any species, actually. Don't get caught up in thinking you need, I can only fish rainbow trout roe for steelhead and rainbow trout, or I can only fish salmon roe for when the salmon come in. That is like so far from the truth. What you're doing is presenting bait in front of a fish, and if it wants to feed and eat or attack out of aggression, it's going to. Even as far as some guys will only fish roe from that body of water, they will source roe from a fish and they will only fish that roe in that creek. And that's just, you know, I just laugh when I hear that kind of stuff.
It's funny how some anglers, the random confidence things that they have going. Honestly, like when I was younger, I used to fish Chinook roe for everything and I still caught fish. You're not going to have a steelhead it's hungry and it sees a bunch of eggs drifting towards it. It's like, wait a second. Those look to be about 8 millimeter and not 5. Like, no, like they're going to hit it. They're not that intelligent. They're not looking at it with a microscope. So yeah, that's interesting. I have heard that about brown trout roe. I've never used it myself, but now I'm definitely not going to try it. So thanks. Thought we could talk a little bit about conservation, because I know you're really into conservation, especially, you know, your roe is great. And the cool thing about it is you don't have to kill a fish to get your eggs. And I know a lot of guys are like, you know what, I'm going to keep a few fish a year. That's totally your right. Nothing wrong with that. I have nothing against that at all. Problem is, I like to think that, you know, anglers that are serious about the sport would like to keep the sport going, have the fish spawn and not kill them just to get some bait. And I know a lot of guys would be like, oh, I'll eat the fish, but oftentimes I feel like they're just keeping it for the eggs. And then they eating it is the second part. They're like, I'll eat it. But the fact is you can buy eggs that are from a farmed fish that's already going to be eaten, that was grown in a farm, and not, you know, killing a native fish that hasn't spawned yet, you know, food for thought. But conservation, what would you say is the importance of ethical fishing practices and respecting the catch limits with steelhead fishing? Because I know they changed a bit.
Right. Yeah. Years ago, I think you used to be able to keep up to 5 steelhead. And now it's with the sport, it's 2, and conservation, it's 1. You and I as individuals can't do anything about changing those regulations. And if you want to go out, whichever license you have, if you want to keep your 1 or 2 fish, you have every right to do that. However, this is such a touchy subject, and I'm not sure the right words to use, but consider just opening your mind to understanding that fish are being over-harvested, they're losing habitats, there's invasive species, there's increased pollution, there's development, and just really think, do I need to be killing this fish or not? And why am I killing it, right? If you're using it to you know, all of it. You're going to keep the eggs to source as bait, and you're going to feed your family with the fish. You have every right to go do that. And I'm not going to say that you can't. I'm just saying, just consider trying to open your mind a little bit to asking yourself, do I need to do this?
I have nothing against keeping trout. I keep the odd trout myself, but some people, and usually they're not serious anglers, they will keep their limit every time they go out fishing. And the thing is, that's totally fine. Like, that's the law that we have now. Even if we don't agree with it, that's what it is. You can keep two steelhead every time you go out, or one, depending on your license. And then there's people that are totally against keeping any fish. And there has to be some, you know, leeway between both those, because it's not wrong to keep a fish, but at the same time, you shouldn't be keeping, well, in my opinion, you probably shouldn't be keeping fish every time you go out, because like you said, there's so many factors involved, especially fishing where we fish on the North Shore of Lake Ontario. We're in a huge area with hundreds and hundreds of steelhead anglers. And you have to think, if everyone goes out and keeps, let's just say five fish a year, and there's hundreds and hundreds of steelhead anglers, and everyone keeps five fish a year, that adds up quick, right? I always think of, there's an example, it has nothing to a steelhead, but there's a lake that I grew up fishing with my dad. They're showing me pictures from, you know, back in the day, they'd have big stringers of 5 pound largemouth. Just every time they went out, they'd keep their full stringer of big bass. They're all like 3, 4, 5, 6 pounds, even some of them. And there'd be like, not just one of them, but like the whole family, like my uncle and grandpa and all that. And they'd be keeping fish, and the, you know, the campers beside them would be keeping the fish too. And now that lake has no fish in it, and they're like, oh, it's too bad about that lake. Like, it got fished out. It's like, yeah, it did. And it was you guys that did it. You know, it has consequences. These fish don't grow back in like, you know, 1 year. You keep these fish, it takes them years to get the size where they're going to spawn. Like, I like what you said. You have to think about, should I kill this fish? Or maybe think about, should I kill this many fish a year, and try to keep ethics in there a little bit, because it is a resource that's slowly and slowly getting smaller and smaller, and more people are fishing. So it is something definitely to think about.
We here in Ontario, simply put, we just don't have the resources with stocking that we see in some of the states. And the data's there. There's some of the dams and that you can collect the metrics on, and you see the number, like, it's, you can't debate it. The numbers are decreasing. You know, it's one thing if 500,000 or 1 million fish were stocked in each system across North, you know, Ontario, then I'd say go whatever your number is, and you're allowed to go do it, you know. And that's more of that put and take fishery, where we don't have that same put and take fishery here in Ontario. Just trying to ask everyone to open your mind a little bit to, you know, do I really need to kill these fish right now or not?
Yeah, it's not like Lake Michigan, where they're literally dumping cohos and salmon just in the lake. And they're like, listen, these are in here for you guys. Keep them. You know, they don't have a super high successful spawn rate anyway. These guys are going out, taking their limits. That's what they're there for. But in Ontario, they don't do that, unfortunately. So yeah, definitely keep that in mind. So I thought we could talk a little bit about another topic that is very important, and not a lot of people talk about it, is river etiquette. Now, that is one thing that I've had many people over the years tell me, it kind of turned them off of steelhead fishing, is the lack of etiquette that some people have. And I'm not saying everyone does this. A lot of serious steelhead anglers are they're very good, but there are some grouchy ones, and a lot of new people, maybe they don't know, they're new. We'll give them the benefit of the doubt. So when it comes to steelhead fishing, we'll just talk about a few of them, but what are some of the things that you should absolutely not do if you're just new to steelhead fishing and you just don't know? What should you never do?
Right. Yeah, no, it's a great question, and I'm glad we can talk about this. Before we even get to other anglers, let's just take this back and consider the resource itself. Be careful, especially during trout opener. Now, most of these fish have spawned. You'll see fish on spawning beds. One, never target fish that are in their spawning time. There's definitely an ethical red flag if you're targeting fish that are in the middle of doing their spawn, as well as watching for now vacant reds, their nests that they build. They're very identifiable. You can go onto Google and what does a steelhead nest or bed look like? And essentially, it's after the fish have done their spawn, they've kicked up rocks, and they've created sort of like an oval in the water, which is identifiable as a very lighter toned circle in the water. And that's where fish has made its nest. So just be very mindful of that, and not to go step in on hundreds of fish that are hopefully one day going to be real size steelhead that you can catch, which at that point would just be fertilized eggs. And the ethics of taking out everything you bring in, any sort of garbage you bring in, Tim Hortons coffee cups, wrappers, you know, bait packaging, whatever it is, have the mindset of the right thing to do and the ethical thing to do is pack out more than you even bring in. And that's just a camping thing, a hunting thing, a fishing thing. Anytime you go out, just be careful of not even realizing, you know, a wrapper might blow out of your pocket, or whether you're intentionally doing it or not, do your best to always leave the resource cleaner than it was there than when you showed up, right? Definitely. And then now the beast of other anglers and the ethics of, you know, the etiquette of other anglers. You know, all I can say is we're all humans, respect each other. Some clear, crystal clear rules. If someone's in a spot before you, they probably get up earlier to be there. They're there, they're fishing it. Give them the space. Even more so after, you know, the opening day and afterwards, once we're talking the end of April and May, like we said earlier at the start of this podcast, you can go fish anywhere. We're not restricted to just south of the CN tracks. You know, go give your legs a stretch, go get more steps in, go find, you know, go for an adventure, go find somewhere else to fish. But when it's, you know, the opening morning, ethically, if you want a spot, the earlier you get there, be the first one there. If someone's already there, they beat you. They beat you. They're there. If you want to fish that spot and it's your only spot, you know, and you have to go fish that spot, well, you should have got up earlier. But, you know, approach that angler first. Don't go stand right beside them. That's what causes so much of the fighting and issues. Use your words. Ask, do you mind if I fish here? I'm going to respect your space. I'm going to respect your fishing. Do you mind if I angle here with you? That can go so far. And if somebody says no, well, there's your answer. Don't make it a thing. This person wants that space. Like I said, they got there before you. Let them fish. You both are now peaceful if you just walk away and go fish somewhere else. And do even one better. Go down to the bend below him where he can see you or she and hook up and let them see you catch fish. How is that going to make you feel instead of standing beside someone and have them outfish you in a spot they beat you to? You know,
that's hilarious. Yeah. It happens every year to me. I'll be fishing a spot even by myself or with another guy. We're at like a bend or something. And some guy will high hole us. He'll just go above and just let his float drift right right through where we're fishing. It's like, buddy, this is literally where I am. And you're just drifting right in front of me. Like, now I'm waiting on you to pull your bobber out, you know? So it can make even the most peaceful people dream of violence. So I would recommend, yeah, give people space. And I've had guys that come up to me and be like, hey, it's a nice big hole. It could definitely hold two guys. And they come up to me and they're like, hey, you know, I'm just heading down. Do you mind if I make a few drifts at the tail end? I'm like, no problem. You know, do your thing. You know, and I've also had guys where, you know, I have a fish on in a pool and I'm fighting it, you know, below the pool to keep it out of the main pool, and I get it in and they'll just swoop in and start fishing the pool. And I'm like, dude, I was literally fishing there. But then again, I've had other people be like, hey, do you mind if I make a few drifts while you're, you know, taking care of the fish? Like, no problem. As soon as I'm done, you know, they're on their way. So there's definitely being polite and ethical and etiquette that you have on the water that can just make everyone happier. And I'm not saying that there's a lot of bad anglers out there, because there's not, but a few that might make you want to pull your hair out. But most of them are absolutely fantastic. Like, I've never had a problem with Jake when I saw him down the creek. He's never high-holed me or anything, but I'm sure that you have some pretty, we're not going to talk about them, but I'm sure you've had some pretty interesting experiences over the years.
Yeah, I think I've probably experienced everything you can. And you know, I can honestly say I've never said no to somebody who's asked if they could fish with me in where I was, if there, you know, wasn't anybody else there. It goes so far if you use your words and say, do you mind if I throw some drifts in here with you?
Yeah.
For someone to say no, they got to be a pretty, you know, unpleasant person.
Yeah.
And then why even be in that situation in that instance, go somewhere else. The fish have to go through every part of the water system to get to those spots, upwards and downwards. And the amount of fish that are in transition in those areas, you can go pick fish off all over the place.
Definitely, because a lot of the times the fish get pressured, right? And they'll drop back below the pool. Maybe there'll be one behind a rock or a boulder, some spot you wouldn't even think twice about. You walk right by it. If you see all the anglers fishing the pools and you kind of work backwards behind the pool or above it, sometimes you're fishing a pool and the fish get spooked and you'll just see them shoot down river, right? Those fish go somewhere. You can find them. Usually they're going to be at the next slightly deep spot. Go look and find those fish. And generally they're not as pressured and you can catch them. So that's fantastic. That's also another tip too. So if you see Jake down at the river and you want to watch what he's doing and learn a little bit, you go up and ask him if you can fish the pool with him. He just told you that literally he said, yes, you can 100% go up to him. And maybe he'll even give you some row bags too. I was going to say too, another thing that I try to do, I've done this a few times, steelhead fishing, but other fishing too. If you see someone that is clearly a beginner, you have to think how intimidating this is for them. it's intimidating for a lot of people to go steelhead fishing, but as a total beginner, they may not, you know, they may have done their research and stuff, but maybe they don't know what bait to use. Maybe they don't know where to put their split shots. Like I've had people ask me that, how do I do it? Do I bunch them up? Do I drift them out? You know, like they don't know. Spend 2 seconds and help these guys and girls out. Give them a bunch of row bags, give them a pack of pink worms, give them some hooks, like whatever they need. Just be like, yeah, this is what we're doing here. You should be fishing around here. This is a good spot. Just try here. You know, oh, your bobber looks a bit low. Maybe, you know, put it up a little bit. Give them some tips. These are the anglers of the future. And these people, they're going to help other people too eventually when they learn good. So it makes it a more pleasurable experience for everyone. So that's one thing that I'd recommend. If you see Jake, maybe he'll have some, you know, gifts that he can give you, but don't quote me on that. But speaking of gifts, we actually have an awesome giveaway. And I said to Jake that, oh, we'll mention it halfway, but we got talking and I totally forgot. Love talking about fishing, right? So why don't you tell us a bit about our giveaway of this episode, Jake?
Yeah, so what we want to do is sort of outfit the lucky winner here with some product here that would sort of give you that array of everything we talked about, what you should be bringing with you for trout opener and different things to have. So like you said, you can have a ton of stuff with you that takes time to accumulate, and or you can just go out with some of the core things. So what we're going to do is give away $100 credit to the shop. That will definitely get somebody going with a bunch of row, spawn time, leader, shot, hooks, anything you would need to get yourself on the water, or you can put it towards a new rod or a new reel or whatever it is. But yeah, we like to offer up $100 to the store that somebody can win to get some gear.
That's absolutely awesome. I'm not allowed to enter, but I really want to make a fake account right now and enter. But yeah, so as always, everyone always asks, how can you enter? Well, you got to be a Patreon member, the group of awesome guys and girls every month who donate a few bucks to keep this show running so that me and Andrew don't pay for it out of our own pockets. We would like to thank Jake too for offering such an awesome giveaway. I said he could do it $5, but he said 100. So, you know, that's great. And honestly, $100, if I was looking through your website right now, I could buy a lot of stuff for $100. That's an awesome giveaway. You could buy, like you said, you could buy almost everything you need to get ready. Or if you're already into steelhead fishing, you got all that stuff, put it towards a new rod. Buy some fluorocarbon. That stuff ain't cheap. Like you can use this as a great giveaway. So we'd like to thank you for that. So I'd just like to add one thing. If you do purchase something from Fishheads Canada, just write in the comments when you order that Average Ontario Angler sent you. That way, Jake knows how awesome it is to be a sponsor on our show, and maybe he'll do it again. Awesome to have Jake on the podcast. It's very seasonal, this podcast. Like, it's unfortunate. I get a lot of people be like, can we have another steelhead podcast? Can we do this? But hey, we have to go through the month. We got to do what's popular this month. Next week, we're going to be talking about other things like crappie and walleye coming up. And then it's muskie, then it's bass, then it's, you know, it just keeps going. But I'm glad that we had a lot of awesome steelhead guys. We had Angling Art a few weeks ago, and I've been trying to get Jake on the podcast for a while, so it's absolutely awesome to have him. I learned a lot today, and I know that someone that's just getting into steelhead fishing or even an intermediate steelhead angler definitely learned a lot too, so we do appreciate that. So before we end this episode, I warned Jake though, because I'm a nice guy, I'm like Andrew, who just throws people onto the sword, but we have the quote of the week. So what's the quote of the week?
Okay, short and simple, persistence and patience.